What's the game-changing realization that helped you build a high-performing team? That question is at the center of every episode of the HR Impact Show. Every HR professional wants to build a team that has empowered managers, engaged employees, and an organization that's striving to become elite. The challenge is that you're often told to do more with less. We're going to fix that. Every week, we will feature executive and senior HR leaders from across the country, and they will share with us their actionable insights and best practices that's going to help empower you to create an engaged, elite workforce. Here's the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the HR Impact Show. My name is CT, and I'm your host, and we're going to be talking about some counterintuitive leadership wisdom. And to speak about that with me today is Sandra Guerra. We have Sandra in the studios with us today, and she's the head of HR for North America at Siemens Energy and Siemens Gamesa. Welcome to the show, Sandra.
Thank you. Great to be here, CT. Thanks for the invite.
So, Sandra, tell us a little bit more about your role. And we were talking a little bit about the mission that Siemens Energy and Siemens Gamesa have on this earth. So, could you tell us a little bit more about that and your role in driving and powering that vision?
Would love to. Thank you. So, yes, the vision of Siemens Energy is to energize society. And I absolutely love that just in general and in life, because I believe that's my role as an HR professional and just as a human is to energize people. So I completely connect with it and I love it. And it makes me want to get up and come to work and just be a part of this great organization.
That's really good. And when you talk about energizing society, I love that it's both a metaphor as well as you guys literally do that.
Exactly.
So maybe if I can double click a little bit on some of the operations that are being done, like what does that look like? And then the kind of talent that you look for to be able to help power all of that.
Sure. Maybe it would help a little bit if I talked about the energy transition and what that means and then what our company does to support that, because I think that's really the heart of what the company does and why it's important that I'm in the role that I'm in to help ensure that we have the right people and the right culture and environment to make us thrive. So in terms of the energy transition, we're referring to a global shift from traditional fossil fuels to more sustainable renewable energy and energy sources. You have to understand that there's multiple things that impact our ability to not only have this energy transition, but to make it available for everyone to have energy. So what I mean by that is you have fossil fuel, the old way of generating energy and distributing energy to the world, and then to now the more renewable things such as wind and solar and water and just different things that we can use that are more natural sources of energy. Many people would think that, oh, we want to completely do away with fossil fuels because those are limited. They cause damage to our environment and to the ozone layer and things of that nature, causing global warming. There's a lot of different thoughts on that. But for the most part, what I'd like to say is one of the things that I've learned in my short time in the energy business is that you can't source the world with only one source of energy. It's not really possible or sustainable at this point. So you need all sources of energy in order to keep things moving so that we don't have areas of the world that don't have access to energy. So yes, you can use wind and we can move in that direction, but there are times that the wind doesn't blow. And so when that doesn't happen, then what do you have? And you can use solar, but there are times when solar isn't possible for us because of cloud cover or whatever. So you'll find situations that happened in Texas where we had wind farms and we had solar farms and they weren't enough to sustain us. They had power outages, massive power outages, right? So it really, what I love about Siemens Energy is our commitment to the energy transition and thinking through how can we be a part of all. Yes, we have gas turbines. Yes, we have the grid technology that supports the storing of energy and distribution of energy. And then we have the newer, looking at hydrogen and different types of things that we're exploring into. So really, it's not looking at one. It's looking at how do we play a part in all aspects of energy and how can we help the world do this in an effective, cost-effective. The reason I think it's important is we need the right type of employees that are passionate about energy and this energy transition to be a part of it. You can get people that don't know anything about it, but it's really nice to have people that are passionate about energy because then they're committed. There's good seasons and bad seasons in any industry. And in energy, there are really good seasons and then there are really not so good seasons. So you have to be able to weather the transition, so to speak, and have people that engage in the why of what we're doing.
I love that so much because it's so rare that you can actually find and build a career around something that is existentially supportive of the human race. And having that diversity of energy sources and reducing the dependence on any single one of them to create long-term sustainability for society. Within this role, you must be proud of so many things, but what is that single achievement that you feel you're most proud of?
That's a great question. Now, in terms of HR, I can tell you this team has gone through quite a bit. It's closer to 4 years now. The Siemens Energy spun off from Siemens organization, right? And so when that happened, there's a lot of work that goes into play at that point. You have new systems, new processes. You have to pull away from all the old systems, not even just old, all the existing of what everyone knew is no longer what it is today. And so how do you do that in a way that doesn't collapse the whole business? We're talking from organizational structure to system, like IT systems, HRIS systems, procurement systems, pay system, everything has to be redone. And if I have to think about what I'm most proud of, it's the commitment to us transitioning to being our own organization over the long haul so that we can support the business and the huge goals and objectives that it has in the energy transition. So what does that mean for us? We had not only all of the change management initiatives that we're doing, all the implementation of all these new processes and such, but really, we had an outstanding order intake year, outstanding. And really, that shows how hard not only the organization is working, despite all of the change management. I think that is extraordinary. Very seldom do you see that level of change within an organization and having such a massive, successful year in terms of order intake and such. So on top of that, we're in the process of integrating Siemens Gamesa into our organization. So we have even more change coming up ahead. The commitment of the people in this organization has got to be the one thing that I would say is hard not to be proud of. We have a population, I would just say generally, 50% of our business has been there more than 10, 15 years.
Wow.
I have 13,000 people in North America with both of the companies. And I'll tell you that their commitment to energy is by far, it's compelling. It's the only other time I've seen anything like it is when I worked in healthcare. In healthcare, I worked there for 17 years. It's just in a different vessel, right? It's not in the healthcare vessel, it's the energy space.
That's awesome. Thinking through all that change that you've gone through and you now need to still go through, what is your moonshot goal for the next 12 months?
Really, right now, it's continuing on with all the change management. We have systems. I think people underestimate how much systems mean to a business. I've seen organizations that have really tried to be cost efficient and go with the cheaper route with their systems, and it has come back to bite them. We are really trying to get everything in line so that we can truly be a global organization where we're all on the same system, same processes and such. And I think every organization tries very much to do that very thing, but you cannot underestimate the power that systems play in an organization.
Yeah, I'm a tech geek, so I'm 100% with you. And third on this list of rapid fire questions, what's the leadership or HR myth that you wish would just go away?
I say this and I say this loosely because I do believe that technology is the one area that innovation exists. But a lot of people think that HR is different in their own company. You know, HR is different. Not really. HR is HR. I haven't found challenges that are different in this organization than in another organization. I've been in five different industries, from healthcare, hospitality, entertainment technology, now energy. I was in aviation before. The problems are all the same. All the problems are the same. There's really nothing new there. The way that we handle the problems that emerge are slightly shifting in terms of technology, but HR as a whole hasn't really changed much. We acquire, we want to attract, develop, and retain. Those are the three big buckets of HR. And within it, the culture, leadership development, learning and development, all of those things still exist. So it's all really the same. It's how you do it as a business that makes you successful or not. So yeah, that would be the myth, that HR is different.
With that, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about your specific situation today, where you're a relatively lean HR team that's supporting a base of 13,000 employees. What are some of your secrets to making it work?
That's a great question. I would say coming in and stepping in to this organization, being new to the business, these are the three things that stand out the most to me. You really need to understand what the business is going through, what their strategy is, and how you need to support that. Whether it's understanding how many people need to come in, what the people are like. You really just need to have a firm understanding of the business and its needs to be successful, so that you can determine what are the key skills that you need within your HR team to support, understanding where the risks are so that you can prevent and mitigate those risks, and really how you can keep them more efficient at being leaders and managers so that they can get to their customers and supporting the business overall. So that's the first one, is understanding the business needs. And then the second one is really establishing structure that supports that. For example, I came in initially and we put in play one structure, trying to be more conscientious of scope and size of how much an HR business partner would tackle for the business. I had people all over the place in terms of how much scope they had. And I really had to take a look at it and say, what is reasonable and how can my team be more of a customer-centric or customer-focused towards the business? And I had to really look at size and scope. Does it make sense? Can they handle the load? Are they coming to the table with the same practices? I have one HR business partner doing it one way, another one doing it another way, but can they count on the same type of data on a regular basis? Can they count on the fact that you know what you're going to be discussing with them on a regular basis? What their engagement is? Have they addressed their action plans? Have they addressed their leadership development needs? And are they focused on where their challenges are with performance? And what are the conversations, the common conversations that they should have? So really making sure that you have a structure that supports what HR business partners need to be for the business is important. And then having the consistency in our processes and our tools to be able to execute as an HR business partner. So that's what we've worked on, and I would say has greatly improved our ability to service our business. And then the last one is the team, having the right people on your team. And we all know this, you want to make sure you have the right talent on your team. We've worked very hard to upskill and to ensure that we had the right skill sets, whether it was project management skill sets or employee relations skill sets, or even trying to build the capability of union labor relations skill sets on our teams. These are all critical for us to make sure that we're mitigating risk and moving through things. We spend a lot of time doing that. When looking at the team, collaborative practice has been what has made us successful in this past year. And I call it collaborative practice because I bring my team together, my leadership team together, and we are co-designing. It is not me as the leader designing the strategy to align to the greater strategy. We are co-designing what this looks like. We are determining what the biggest needs are for the business and establishing project teams that specifically are targeted to address those needs. And that has been, in a nutshell, what has helped make us successful this past year.
Oh, that's very inspiring. And so being able to get a deep understanding of the business and their needs and the kind of risks that are involved. And secondly, adopting a very almost like a customer-centric approach to the business to be able to support them with the kind of structure, processes, and tools that enable that support on a consistent basis. And then underlying all of that is the strength of the team, both in terms of the skills and the ways of working, that collaborative practice and co-designing. Within all of this, we were chatting sometime back about conventional wisdom, especially when it comes to like career development. Within the organization, we should find a way to make ourselves indispensable in our jobs. And we were hinting something about that with the collaborative practices and the ways of working, where that may not always be true. Do you feel like that's wrong to focus on making ourselves indispensable in our roles?
I think there's two ways to look at this. There's the part of being indispensable in that you show up and you provide value, which is great. But indispensability can sometimes mean that someone's creating protective barriers around themselves and the work. And that is not good. That, in my opinion, creates challenges amongst your team to accessibility to information, to work more smoothly and to be transparent in what something is and what something is not. You have people that are so busy protecting their jobs, no one actually knows what they do. Now they become not so valuable because no one really knows what they do. And meanwhile, we still aren't getting answers to what needs to be done. So I really believe that being indispensable is not necessarily a good thing. The way I measure success is when my team can rock and roll without me. When my team can do what they need to do, they know they have the autonomy to make decisions, and my leaders do. The one thing that I ask for is communication, but it's only so that we can be smooth and no one's caught off guard. But otherwise, when I'm gone, I always have a delegate. My whole team knows everyone should have a delegate. If they're not able, there's always a backup that can step in. The project teams, they work, they do their things in order to meet their goals and objectives, and they share it. There's nothing that should be a secret across the business or within our organization. I want my people moving into other positions. I want them, if there's opportunities, even if they're my best quarterback, I'm going to be able to just say, you need to shine. So I'm not holding you back. You go and apply for that thing. I'm not resistant to that. I was taught this many years ago, and it took me years to understand what it means. I want to be the easiest place to come to and the easiest place to leave. And for me, that means nothing but ease here. How can I help you flow in your career, flow in your job? But I also want them to want to do the same for me. So I try to create an environment that is, I do this for them. In turn, they do it for me. I feel released to be able to take vacation, to do what I need to do, because I trust them, wholeheartedly trust them. And I want to have 2 to 3 people lined up to be my successor. So I'm not worried about any of that. I want to share the joy in all of our successes together as a team. To me, indispensable people, yes, but I'm not a big fan of that. I'm just not. I want our team to win together. I do appreciate small wins and even big wins for individuals, but not if it means that it's going to overshadow everyone and no one has a space or no one can get in. It's got to be a win for everyone. And I do believe that as people promote and progress, that is a win for the team because they see that there's a pathway for them to continue to grow. So that's the indispensability part for me.
Wow, it's been a great conversation so far. Make sure you join the HR Impact community where we gather a community of HR leaders just like you. This is a space where top people leaders share actionable insights and practical playbooks. Sign up today as a member for the community. Get updates on the latest HR resources and exclusive event invites. You can join the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And now, back to the show.
I think it's a really nice, nuanced point of view that you bring up here. You're really threading that needle in terms of being able to show up and provide value, and therefore the organization sees value in you and continue to want to work with you, not just the organization, but your bosses, your peers, your teammates. At the same time, building such a strong team that it is more than the sum of its parts.
That's right.
That no single part is irreplaceable, like the team structure itself is of value. And I think within this podcast, it's one of the recurring themes that we see. How do you go about building those elite teams when they come together? I especially like what you were saying also about being easy to come to and also very easy to leave. Do you find that those are conflicting if you have quite rigid structures and that sense of efficiency versus that sense of, it's really easy to work with Sandra and she's always got my back. And next time I can leave for something better that I know she's going to push me towards. And that's very individualized kind of treatment based on, it's not a one size fits all, more like a one size fits one approach. Do you feel like there's a tension there?
No, not typically. I'm so glad what you received from what I said, because that is one of my values. Individualization is one of my strengths. And I want people to feel important as an individual, but also important as a part of the team. So I do a lot of both. I focus on the team and I focus on the individual. I know all the people on my team. I try to have skip level meetings with them on a regular basis. I try to remember what's important to them about their growth and where they want to see themselves in their career. I try to immediately make connections as I go. Okay, we've got this project. Let's immediately hook them to this. Oh, this person wants this. Let's send them here. I can be very individualistic while still being concerned about the overall team health. I don't feel that there's a lot of pull. The only time I feel there's pull is if someone is acting out of self-preservation in terms of putting that bubble. And then it impacts the team. But I don't typically find that tension, not yet, but doesn't mean it couldn't happen. I've been with this team for just about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't been that long with this team, but we're having a lot of success with my team. They're constantly impressing me and I love that. And I want to give them as much opportunity as possible to keep impressing me.
I want to touch on that individualization strength that you have. It sounds like it's straight from StrengthsFinder.
It is.
And it is perfect. One thing that is very individual and requires quite a bit of calibration from person to person is mental health. This can be something that's really hard for leaders to think about and to deal with. Why do you think it's important that they figure it out, though, and actually care for the mental health of themselves and their team?
I was a psych nurse before I went into HR. And so mental health has just always been really a linchpin. When you think about the term linchpin and what it means, it's critical to the success of what people do. It's necessary. Without it, you don't have stability or balance. You need mental health. If mental health is off, people become frayed. They miss things. They can't support conceptually what you're working on. They don't have the energy. They start to get ill. It impacts their family. It impacts their relationships with people at work, their leaders, their colleagues. So mental health is of the utmost importance. Actually, managers that do not focus on the mental health and well-being of their people by making sure they take time off that they need, taking care of their health, giving them space when they're sick, asking them how they're doing and seeing what you can do to support them. I would question whether you have an engaged team. I haven't seen teams that don't think about that and consider that be very engaged, because it's part of compassion. And not having compassion is a surefire way to make sure you've got a very disengaged team. To be quite honest, for the type of environment that we have, where so many of our people have longevity with the company, you have to have a certain level of compassion and caring about people individually. And I think that is hand in hand with having good mental health practices at work, checking in, making sure people are well, creating environments where people can speak up safely.
I actually believe that most people would have that kind of compassion, but not everyone shows it well, put it that way. Not everyone's a psych nurse, right? And had that kind of background where you're naturally, you have the tools and the behaviors that come with it. How do you recommend leaders who may not have much experience with this or any kind of background, who realize that they have a problem in terms of being conscious about mental health, we're not prying too much into areas that should be private to the employee and their teammate, but at the same time also showing that level of concern and, most importantly, like taking action to improve the mental health and engagement of their team?
I've mentioned a few of them already, but here's a few quick things that every manager can do and put into place. One, make sure that people are taking their time off. And when they're taking their time off, demand that they not answer email. Demand that they not, I'm really serious because I have, look, some people call it commitment. I think there's a continuum between people that are truly committed to people that are become martyrs. And what I mean by that is, oh, I have to do this. And if I don't answer them, no one can answer them. And no one is that important. No one, in my opinion. Look, I was in healthcare, right? So for me, we're not saving lives in HR. We are absolutely not. Unless you're actually doing CPR or using an AED on someone that fell to the floor. HR is not firefighters. They're not policemen. And they're definitely not doctors or nurses. There is nothing that we do that is that critical. Take your time off. You need your time off. It is a fact that people that use their PTO actually perform better at work. They have better satisfaction psychologically and physically even. So secure people's time off and make sure that you do not allow them to respond or that you check them when they do. And I do. I will quickly say, why are you responding to me while you're on PTO? Don't do that. Pass it off. And then get back to me when you're back in the office. So that's number one. Number two, if you don't know what to say, if you don't know what's available to you, call EAP. Most employers have EAP. It is a critical resource that can guide you on how to think through these things. And all EAP offers this, the consultation to leaders and managers. So definitely. Number three, leverage your HR business partner, because your HR business partners that can help you. Okay, here's this resource that's available to you. Here's ways that you can interact with your team. They can bring the team together to do their sessions where you work with your manager to determine how your manager can be a better leader. Every company calls them something different. That's what I would say is the things that you can easily do to change the way people feel.
I love it. It's so easy that if you're a leader, you're a manager, you have no excuse to not care for the mental health of your people. Just tell them to take their time off.
Take their time off. Use your benefits, right? Do you know how many people don't get their annual checkups?
I have no
I'm
idea.
Serious. Probably when you look at all the people that are insured in your organization, probably only 30% tap in, fully getting their annual checkup, their annual eye exam, mammograms, when you're 50 and above, their colonoscopy, the things that are free to them for most of their benefits because it's part of their package. Encourage people to take care of their body and their mental health. And I think that alone will produce lots of great things in your business.
In this conversation, we've gone all the way from looking at the organization as a whole, being able to support that with the lean HR team, and all the way down to that individual level. How do you build elite teams that are bigger than the sum of their parts? How do you figure out the basics of looking after your physical and mental health so that you can show up at your best in the workplace every day? This has been a wonderful conversation, Sandra. Thank you so much for joining us. And for those of you listening, I hope you enjoyed the show. For those of you who really want to hear more, head over to www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact, all one word, to check out this show and the others that we have and all the other resources that you can get.
I appreciate the opportunity. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the HR Impact Show. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time, where we'll have another guest who's going to share with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.